Hello and welcome to Presenting, a podcast where we chat about various topics related to role-playing games, typically Paizo products such as Pathfinder and Starfinder, but also others. I'm John Godek, and with me today is Clinton Boomer. Welcome to the podcast.
I could not be more pleased to be here.
Yeah, you know, so Boomer, you may not recall this. Ooh. We met at the last actual, the last live SkullCon.
Oh, damn.
And I actually asked you if you wanted to be interviewed, and you said, sure, let's do it.
Yeah, that sounds like me.
So I'm finally getting around to that. So
well, it's an absolute pleasure, man. I'm glad to be here. I miss SkullCon, man. That was not getting to have that this year was very, very painful for my heart.
Yeah, you know, so that year I went to, I think, 8 live conventions, a lot of big ones and nice. Small ones. And SkullCon was like probably the best of all of them. I was amazed. People had talked it up for so long. And then it's like, oh, I got to go, you know, and it was super.
I don't doubt that one, like one bit. Like, and it makes me really happy. Like I'm an old school SkullConner. Like I've been going to that thing for years upon years upon years. So I'm absolutely delighted that you had a positive experience there. But like, I'm delighted, but not surprised. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Like, yeah, it makes me really happy. And I hope to see you there this year, man.
I'm hoping, you know, if it's still, late September-ish, that's when they're looking at for it.
Sounds right.
I'm hoping that everything's kind of cleared out. I kind of have a medical situation where I'm extra susceptible to stuff. So I don't know if my medical team is actually going to clear me to do anything by then. I'm hoping so.
I totally feel that. I have very, very, very close loved ones who are what you would call immunocompromised.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's very, very, very important to me to do it safe and do it right. But if it can be done safe and can be done right, you'll see me there, man.
Yeah, no, it's the same with me. I'm really hoping so. So I had a kidney transplant in June, so it'll be over a year for me. And typically at that point, they let you kind of start going back to your life. Okay. But they told me it really depends on the pandemic.
That's fair.
So, all right. So Boomer is a longtime gamer, a freelance writer with numerous RPG credits, including some work he's done with Storm Buddy Studios, Green, Ronin Publishing, and Paizo. He finished in the top 4 of the first RPG Superstar, and he also chronicles the misadventures of a fantasy gaming party in his book, Team Murder Hobo Assemble, which is really cool, really cool.
That pleases me immensely. I never know if people enjoy my stupid jokes. So it's feels so good when any person ever is like, oh yeah, that was pretty funny. I'm like, oh yes. Like I feel like a millionaire.
You know, so it's interesting. Where do you kind of get the inspiration for all these situations? Are these actual things that you wish would happen to the parties you're in or that you're GMing for? Or are you just kind of, I don't know. Where do they come from?
That's a good question. That's an excellent question. Okay, so I have one novel out, The Hole Behind Midnight, and not to loop off too far, but like the main character is a reprehensible scumbag. Like, I mean, he's the hero, or he's the protagonist, let's phrase it that way, but he's just this reprehensible. And a bunch of people were like, oh man, like, how do you write that character? And all I could say is like, because he lives in my head. Like, he's not me. I want to be really clear, but like, I can stop for a moment and like, I can hear his voice. I can be like, well, what would Royden do? So like, when I first started doing all the Team Murder Hobo stuff, we definitely have like some moments of what you would call like early installment weirdness. Like, you know, you go back and watch the first season of Simpsons and you're like, that's a weird character design. Like, they definitely don't have people with faces shaped like that in later seasons. But like once I think it kind of hit its stride, and I don't know when that was, I really found that I can kind of hear the characters in my head. I mean, up to a point, you know, I mean, not to get, you know, sound insane. But like I will be sitting there and some stupid thing that the barbarian would say will pop into my head. And I could just go, oh, what would the wizard say in response to that? Oh, what would the cleric say? And I mean, I think up to a point it's easy because they fulfill, you know, pretty iconic tropes, right? Like these are archetypes. But I don't know, but I think they're fun. I think they're goofy. I compared it. I was told somebody, I said, it's the comic is not, it's a comic. It's tweets. But I compared it. I said they're almost like Archer or Brooklyn Nine-Nine, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Those are workplace comedies, but the actual workplace doesn't matter. Like, I mean, it's interesting, and they're like, oh yeah, Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Like they go out and they're police officers. You know, Archer, they have a mad scientist. They have Krieger on staff. But like, fundamentally, it's just these extreme personalities bouncing off of each other. And yeah, that's basically all it takes. My son, who is six, he was screaming something. I mean, he was having fun. He was being silly, but he screamed eye lasers and threw something across the room. And literally the entire idea of that, there was a relatively recent post where the elf prince is like, your rescue involved the barbarian screaming eye lasers and yeeting a piano at someone. Like, I mean, that entire scene popped in my head. The only problem is, when the scenes, they tend to be long. I don't know if you can tell I'm long-winded. Just my first novel is like over 500 pages. Like I talk a lot. So that stupid format of trying to do 280 characters, whatever a tweet is, 280 characters, that has been so painful. Like every time I think I'm like, here's the perfect tweet, and I write it out, I'm like, I'm 700 characters over. Time to slice this down a little bit.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I really like how topical they are, though. You know, how they're really bringing in current things into this really kind of weird, you know, fantasy kind of adventure. Oh, you know,
that means the world to me. There's an absolutely brilliant gentleman. I should be clear. This guy is a thousand times smarter than I am. By the name of Dennis Detweiler. And I follow him on Facebook. I'm friends with him on Facebook. I follow him on Twitter. He's absolutely brilliant. Lives in Canada, a game designer. He's one of the guys behind Unknown Armies and also Delta Green. And this guy wakes up smarter than I'll ever be. But he was discussing something the other day that I thought was really interesting. He just goes, you know, the miracle of the modern age is that you, the designer, can think of something, and if you know what you're doing, 30 minutes later, it can be accessible to literally everyone on the planet. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that used to be the big thing for South Park was, I think it was 2 weeks to air, right? They said, we have the fastest turnaround time in all of television. You know, this is like late 90s, early 2000s, but they just go, you know, if we think of a funny joke, 2 weeks later, it's on television. And you just go, oh my God, how do they do that? You know, they're so topical. They're so funny. Mm-hmm. God, you know, they really got their pulse on there, their finger on the pulse of the nation. But you go, yeah, in the modern day, yeah. I mean, I can have the stupidest idea in the world while I'm washing dishes. And like before those dishes are dry, like I'm like, yep. And that's somebody in France is already rolling their eyes at it because it's so stupid.
Now, one of the things you don't seem to do, and I'm curious if this is intentional or not, you don't seem to get any political flavor one way or the other with things.
I don't know. How about I phrase this? I'm pretty openly left of left, right? Like, I am, and that is what it is.
Yeah,
I am. I have friends who fit in a number of different categories. But like there are some things to me, like one of the things that was important, to me really early on was to never give definitive genders for any of the characters. Mm-hmm. And not for any particularly good reason, but because I noticed I'd done it for like six tweets in a row and I was like, I'm just going to do that. Like the fighter, I don't think it's really important what gender the fighter is. And it's much more interesting to me if like, you know, you, the reader can sort of fill it in. I have some headcanon for some of it. I know the person who in my head plays the character of the monk. And it is a good friend of mine, who is African-American. who was very super into anime, super into comic books, super into Street Fighter, and on and on and on. But like, I think it would be foolish of me to be like, oh yeah, and the monk is specifically black. That's not right. You know, the monk is necessarily male or female. And I've had people reach out to me and say, oh, I really like that you did that. And it is, I don't know if I'm making a statement, but if I am, I hope that it is one of inclusivity, right? Mm-hmm. Where you kind of go, oh yeah, well, like it does any gender, no gender. I don't care. And I hope that that's kind of like the background radiation of it. Like the paladin punches Nazis. And I've made this statement. People are like, well, I don't know if that's very lawful good. I'm like, no. The paladin is canon lawful good, and he will break the jaw of a Nazi, like, no, like, drop of a hat. Because I, like, to my mind, there are certain things where we go, well, that's not political. That's breaking Nazi jaws. So, yeah, I think of the work as inherently political, because I think everything is, but...
Yeah.
But yeah, if people of every stripe and creed and culture can enjoy the work, then that pleases me immensely.
Nice. So you've been writing for RPGs for a long time. You kind of mentioned here since 2007, and then, you know, taking fourth in the 2008 RPG Superstar. You know, that's kind of like a whole generation, like, you know, for RPGs. How have things changed since when you started to kind of where things are now?
That is an excellent question. What's funny to me is I still think of myself as like the new kid. Like I'm the young punk guy. To a point where that's the thing. I walk into a convention and you can look around and you can see, like, here are the people. I mean, their names, their thumbprints, their identities are so stamped into the DNA of the games we play, the stories we tell. It's the weirdest thing in the world to, like, be walking through a hotel bar, at Gen Con, and look over and be like, oh yeah, there's Skip Williams talking with Monty Cook. Mm-hmm. And you just go, are you kidding? I mean, like, up to a point, that's, you know, I don't know. I feel like the ancient Greek who's like, oh yeah, over there, by the way, that's actual Zeus. Like, that's actually like the literal god of thunder. Yeah. He's just like, he's chatting with Apollo. Oh yeah. God of the sun. Yeah. Like, it's, I don't know. Because these people, they're icons. They're huge. So long story short, it is weird to me to be like, oh yeah, like, you've been doing this a long time. You're like, really? Well, 17 years, I guess. Or however long. Over 10 years? Yeah, less than 17. I'm not that old. Things have definitely changed. I did RPG Superstar back in, like, 2007. So I always tell people, like, oh, I've been writing since, like, writing professionally since 2007. It was RPG Superstar 2008, because it ended in 2008. I was in the top four there at the end. It was myself, Jason Nelson, Rob McCreary. Like, it was a good year. All of us lost. I'm trying to remember her name. She beat us like redheaded stepchildren. Like, she was amazing. Christine Schneider, a German writer. She's absolutely unbelievable. I bow to her superior mastery of game design. It was really neat because we immediately got to jump in to do the first. It was the Pathfinder Chronicles campaign setting, which was for 3.5, which then became the Intersea World Guide for Pathfinder once that edition, once the new system came out. And I, you know, just got to work on so many things since then. But, like, I'll tell you, I can't tell someone, oh, you should do what I did. And The people I really admire, guys like Owen Casey Stevens, like, he's really open about the, like, oh, people ask me, like, how do you break into the industry? And all I can say is, I have no idea. Right? Like, I wrote for Dragon Magazine. I wrote for Dungeon. Like, back when these were, like, literal physical magazines that would come to your house. I don't think anyone's gotten a physical magazine in over a decade. And it's so a ton of stuff has changed. I mean, when I started, fourth edition Dungeons and Dragons wasn't out. Like, I literally had to sit and make the decision, do I sign this piece of paper that has to do with had publishing using the new fourth edition version of like their weird version of the OGL, and having to make that decision, like, oh, do I want to make the jump to this crazy new path, quote unquote, Pathfinder system? I remember sitting there at PaizoCon, like watching Jason Bullman do his presentation on the new game. Like there was a ton of stuff we just didn't even know, and like his presentation on the Paladin, where he's like, oh, Smite Evil now functions in a different way. Like hearing people like cheer, and you like, that's so different from a person who's getting started now. In that, like, I mean, a person who wanted to get into Dungeons and or game design now, they would be working with 5th edition Dungeons and Dragons for one, and they would be working with 2nd edition Pathfinder. Like, I'm 2 or 3 editions gone. Like my experience, like how I was trained in what I learned to do. So yeah, I know times have definitely changed. How we publish, how books come out. I mean, yeah, you could used to be able to get PDFs back in the day, but it's a whole new ball game as far as that is. Like I do a lot of publishing, or at least more recently through Storyteller's Vault, which is all stuff like White Wolf, like old school, like 90s, old school Vampire the Masquerade. And literally, you can't get print-on-demand versions of your books. Like, I wrote a book. It's out there right now. It's a PDF. You cannot buy a print-on-demand version. It's so weird to me.
Well, yeah, because it's so expensive for those individual print runs compared to, you know, mass production on, you know, really cheap paper and stuff like that.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's interesting. You know, you mentioned Jason Nelson and Rob McCree. I actually interviewed both of them. And Jason called out specifically kind of the experience with RPG Superstar is what got him into kind of his publishing company.
Oh, yeah.
And Rob called out specifically that experience with RPG Superstar getting him involved in the company where now he's, you know, a big-time developer for Paizo.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's just, you know, amazing kind of what's come out of that. So what are the kind of things that you're working on now?
Excellent question. Just to loop back, I mean, just because I'll tell you, I've done a bunch of stuff through Legendary Games with Jason Nelson. I mean, he and I became very, 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 very close friends after RPG Superstar. My first trip to Seattle, it was kind of in the wake of RPG Superstar. Both of us were invited to a convention, a sci-fi fantasy convention up in Vancouver. And he was like, oh, yeah, I live not too far from the Canadian border. Like, you should come on up. And, yeah, I mean, we hung out together. And I slept on the man's couch for, you know, a week. And he and I mean, we were both there when Clark Peterson, who's an amazing guy, was like, hey, I want to do this thing, Legendary Games. And, I mean, I was there at the very first design meeting. And, like, I'm in such admiration for what Jason Nelson has done with the thing. And, I mean, I've published a bunch of stuff, through Legendary. I will continue to do so. And, yeah, like it was life changing, to do RPG Superstar. And again, but yeah, I'll tell you, I don't think that even still exists.
No, they had kind of a new kind of superstar this past year, but it wasn't, you know, wasn't sponsored by Paizo, didn't guarantee a Paizo credit and stuff like that. So, but yeah, you know, they're trying to bring something back, I think, the community.
I think that's awesome. I have the absolute world's highest admiration for that. Like, I would love to be involved with that. Like, I just don't have any time, so.
So what are you working on now, then? What's keeping you so busy besides your kids?
Excellent question. The pandemic, I mean, the pandemic is just a, I don't know if anybody out there is a Good Place fan, but it is a shirt show. Yes, I mean, I've got my 3 kids. I got my 6-year-old, I got my 3-year-old, got my baby, my 1-year-old. At the moment, this is secret news as I'm talking to you, but by the time this podcast comes out, it will be known. There's a company, if I said Kobold, like Kobold Quarterly, Kobold Press, I presume most of your readers or listeners we'll know what I'm talking about. It's Wolfgang Bauer's amazing publication. Back in the day, there was Kobold Quarterly, the quarterly magazine of Koboldness. And it's now Kobold Press. He's got some absolutely incredible books that are out there. I've been lucky enough to get to, you know, do a little bit of work for some of them. I was just hired to do, it's a series, it's the Friday Funnies, which they used to do back in the day for the website. Just a little goofy on a Friday, you know, a couple hundred words of just goofiness to get people in the door and just gonna go, hey, but if you like this, check out other stuff on, you know, the same website. Because it, especially in the modern day, if you don't do that to your website, no one will come to it. Like you're, people will just go to Facebook and Twitter, maybe Instagram, and they maybe Amazon. They do not care about you. But yeah, so Wolfgang is just super awesome. Scott Gable is one of the guys he just hired on over there. Basically to work on digital, I'm not sort of like website and digital development. And yeah, they reached out to me and they said, hey, we would love to have you do what ended up being some of the stupidest comedy writing I've ever done. I couldn't be more proud of it. I'm very pleased. So that's going to be coming out on Fridays for the next couple of weeks. And yeah, just absolute. It felt really good, by the way. Not to loop off too far, but like Gary Larson, the guy who created Farsight, always used to say that that stupid box, right? It's like that stupid box. That was all, like, it was the greatest drawing, like the greatest art instructor he ever had. Mm-hmm. Right? He's like, you know, yeah, I went to art school. God, he's like, why I decided to do that stupid box, I don't know. But like the moment you decide, I want to draw the Titanic, you can't fit it in the box unless you find a different way to draw it. And the tweets, I mean, I rail against them. I hate them so much. Like that word that count. So when my publisher just goes, I don't care how much you write, just give me a couple hundred words, you know, just go for it. I felt like a rich man, where I'm just like, I can just tell stupid Dungeons and Dragons jokes for like four pages. Yeah, this feels really good.
So is it going to be illustrated too, or is it just kind of the what you have right now for what you do online?
It is when you look at it, in theory, it should be, here is what I would have if tweets were allowed to be four pages long. The wonderful people at Kobold gave me very few rules, which worked out great for me. I'm hoping it works out great for them. But basically the question is, hey, write me a stupid joke. Say something funny about Dungeons and Dragons. And that's really all I needed. I don't believe there's going to be any illustration for it. The reason that there's illustration for the book, the little Team Murder Hobo Assemble, is, as far as I understand it, it's because my publisher is Scott Gable over at Broken Eye Books, who's an absolute, I mean, just a gentleman. I would, if this guy was like, hey, I'm pretty sure I could shoot you to the moon and get you back into low Earth orbit, I'd be like, go for it. I'm pretty sure is better than most people's, you know, I swear to God. I trust this man. But yeah, I sent him all the material, and he sends me this thing back. All of that art was done by it was Jason Thompson at Mockman Press, who is an Eisner Award-winning cartoonist.
Wow.
Yeah, I have comics from Mockman Press, like, on my shelf right now. He did an adaptation of, it's H.P. Lovecraft's, like, Dream Quest of Unknown Kadath, or Unknown Kadath. And I love his style. Like, but I literally had to, like, run to my, like, shelf and pull the thing off. and I'm just like, yeah, I'm like, this is it. I've been reading this guy since I was 13. Like, oh, like, I, you know, crap my pants. But yeah, his style, I just love, because he combines this really, this stick figure-y, like, almost childlike. You know, it's just a big circle. This guy's just got a big circle for a head with like one little slash for a mouth and two little slashes for eyes. And then he combines that with this hyper detailed, almost Jeff Darrow. He did a bunch of the design work for The Matrix. He did Hard Boiled for Frank Miller. He did Big Guy and Rusty the Boy Robot for Frank Miller. But Jeff Darrow, like, he iconically, he does this, like, this hyper detailed little minutia. But yeah, like, he's like, oh yeah, here, I hired Jason Thompson to do the Eisner Award winning cartoonist, who presumably, like, my publisher, like, bumped into him at a bar. I was like, hey man, you're amazing. Let me give you $10. But yeah, so I was overjoyed. I was stunned to see his work come in, of like, oh, here's like kind of here's his thoughts on what the warlock would look like. Here's his thoughts of what the wizard or the barbarian would look like. Single, the little, I don't know if you, for anyone who's got a copy of the book in front of them and you could like glance at it, really, really randomly, the barbarian has a ninja star stuck in his or her butt, which is supposed to be this little nod of like, oh, there is a ninja in the party. It's just that we've never seen them there, but like, oh, they're that the barbarian saw them once. Like, there's the ninja star, and it's just to see this work done. I was just overjoyed. I was blown away. And I remember asking my boss, I'm like, oh, hey, Scott Gable. I was like, hey, man, is he going to illustrate the interior? And it was just this like long pause of like, no, like, are you kidding me? Like, dude, we can't afford to have him do a cover. Are you kidding me? We can't afford to have this guy answer an email from us. Shut up. Like, no. But yeah, that's and every once in a while, people reach out and be like, "Oh, you should do this as a comic." And all I can say is, I'm like, I don't have any money, and because artists are very expensive, and because artists, mm-hmm. and I'll be very clear, they work harder than I do, and yeah, I cannot afford half the art I would like to see in the universe, and I could never in a million years look at an artist and be like, "I'd like you to draw pictures of this," and sorry, I don't have any money.
Yeah, no, I've talked to people publishing this stuff, and they talk quite a bit about how expensive it is to get art and maps and everything put in.
Oh, yeah. So. It's not to loop off too far. There's a gentleman actually passed away not too long ago, but a gentleman by the name of Steve Russell. Just a good man. I absolutely adore this guy. He ran a company called Rite Publishing, RITE, as in like Rites and Rituals. Did a ton of third party Pathfinder stuff. Just a great guy. Really gave me a lot of opportunities that in many cases I was not worthy of to see him be like, oh yeah, man, I really believe in you, and be like, hey, I'm not sure you should, Steve. But one of the things I don't think he invented it, because I don't know if you can claim to have invented something like this. It's what I was referred to as reverse design, where the idea was, if you're a writer, you sit down and you're like, oh, and he's a cool monster and he's 12 feet tall and he's got 6 arms and 18 eyes. And then you have to have the publisher has to hire an artist and be like, okay, well, here's the art order. Like, here's what the monster is supposed to look like. And then this poor artist, you know, long suffering, very talented, they sit there and they try to draw a picture of your monster. And then you, the writer, are like, oh man, you only gave him 17 eyes. You know, what Steve Russell did, which was absolutely brilliant, is he would buy art and then contact, you know, someone useless like me and just be like, hey, write this.
Oh, right.
And you go, oh, he's like, yeah, I already have the art. Like, you describe this however you want. Here is the art for the work. Your job is to, it was reverse design, and it was such a challenge. It was such a cool, fun, interesting idea. It saves a huge amount of time. I mean, no spoilers, but like, writing is way faster than arting. And also, nobody cares if you don't really do it that well. Like, you have an editor who's just like, no, he missed a comma. Whereas, like, you just can't fix art. Like, you're like, oh, he didn't do it right, but send it back to him. You know, a writer, you're like, I don't know, fix it yourself. Who cares? But yes, yeah, so it was such a cool idea. A very, 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 very good friend of mine, Matt Bannock, who also did RPG Superstar a few years after I did. He put out, there's an entire book. It's called Faces of the Tarnished Sook. And it's him and an unbelievably talented designer, Justin Sluter. And between the two of them, they would just be given art. They would write up the NPC or the monster or the whatever. Matt would kind of handle a lot of the flavor. Sluter would handle a lot of the crunch. And yeah, they would hammer, they'd pass this thing out. And you know, they're talking to Matt, he just goes, yeah, from me getting the art to it being available for purchase was a super tight turnaround. And that's all I'll say. Like, that maps are difficult. If I were a publisher, and I should be very clear, I am not, and it's for good reasons. But yeah, my trick would be hand the map to the writer and be like, tell me what this is.
So, you know, you mentioned to me earlier that you were doing a game before the interview that we had scheduled.
Oh yeah. Just wrapped my online game.
Yeah. So how has your gaming changed since you had to shift to going online with it?
That's a really good question. If I'm being honest, it has improved immeasurably. I'm old school. I was born in 1980. I was 13 in 1993. I picked up Planescape. The old box set for Planescape came out in 93. That was like whatever it is, it's your first love, right? The Planescape will always be my baby. She'll always be the girl next door, the one who got away. That's how I grew up playing, man, was in a basement or, in my buddy's garage, the idea of like playing on the internet. I mean, I was 19 years old in 1999. The internet sucked back then. Like it was bad. The idea of like trying to use full video and to play with people in other towns, like, no, that's garbage. I think it's only relatively recently that, we've cracked that, whatever it is that allows you to be a play over Zoom or to turn around and play over actual Roll 20. There's a dozen different ways to sit and run a game online, and being forced to adopt that was a godsend. As the dude who's got a 6-year-old, a 3-year-old, a 1-year-old, who works a lot, who is not independently wealthy, who wants to just try to carve out some time even to write, to read, trying to do a game where I invite people over to my home or I go over to someone else's house and then I'm just away from my family for X amount of time, really, really, really difficult. And you just kind of let it slide. You just go, maybe I'll start a new game some other time. And to just have that moment of like, actually, I could run games online. I at one point, kind of ridiculously, my car was stolen, which was bad. That's a whole different story. Mm-hmm. But I basically got online and just kind of said, hey, I would be willing to, if anybody wants to pay me for anything, here's a photograph of a bunch of books I own. I'll ship them to your house. And some people really took me up on it and kind of went, I would be interested in having you, run a game for me. And some of them I do just because I love. It's old friends. I say, yeah. And some of them, well, one of the games I run, it's a Sunday game. And it's a 10-year-old. His mother contacted me. I went to college with her. She said, yeah, would you be able to run a game for my 10-year-old son? He's super fun. And he wants to play Dungeons & Dragons. And now's not a good time to, go to your friendly local game store and learn how to do that. All I could do is nod and go oh my God, yeah, you're absolutely right. So basically being forced to learn how to do that. I game now a lot more than I did, in the lead up to the pandemic, which is good and bad.
Yeah. No, do your kids game yet?
That is okay. Okay, this is such a good question. I just had a conversation with a very, very, very good friend of mine. I don't want to name any names. But he was talking and he's like, oh man, I'm super excited to someday really get my kids into gaming. And I looked at him, I was like, I think that's so cool. Because I had kids late. I'm 40 years old and I've got a 1-year-old. Like that's late in the game to decide to be a dad. I'm 35 years old. Half the guys I know, most of the guys I know had kids before the age of 30, for example. And so I've watched kind of my cohort, guys I went to high school with, guys I went to college with, they've had their kids. You're 30 years old, boom, you got your first kid, which awesome. So, I have all these, what I would call my nieces, my nephews, my godkids, these young people I just love who are the children of some of my favorite human beings in the world. And a lot of my guys are just like, oh man, yeah, I can't wait to game with my kid. Oh man, it's going to be super awesome. I'm going to teach her, all about fighting goblins and murder and stuff. And my answer or like my response, my gut level response for so long was this, if you actually want your kid to enjoy gaming, why would you ever make it a thing that their parents are into? I don't want to sound like a jerk. I mean, I am a jerk. So, that's how it comes off. But when I was a kid, they're my parents. I have good people as my parents. My mother is one of the finest human beings who's ever lived. Just a good one. She's always very supportive of my biggest cheerleader, very supportive of my writing. She'll read anything I ever write. I mean, she buys my stuff. Just an unbelievable woman. But like, gaming is not her jam. Like, she'll talk movies. She'll talk movies. My father does not like fiction. Like, it's an abstract concept. He does not like. He'll read a book on World War II. You know, he'll read a book on, like, you know, submarines. Yeah, he was into his own stuff, ham radio. He was born in 1943. He's old. But the stuff he's into, I really specifically did not and do not think is cool. And that's fine. Like, that's, we're very different people. Dungeons and Dragons, like, I came to that on my own. You know, no one encouraged me to get into it. I grew up during the Satanic Panic, man. The 80s. Mm-hmm. I lived in the Midwest. To come in alone, you know, okay, your dad's into something, that's fine. You know, you're like, oh, yeah, cool. Yeah, my dad really likes this. But, like, I didn't start liking Spider-Man because my dad likes Spider-Man. I didn't get into theater because my dad liked theater or whatever. And, like, I definitely didn't get into Dungeons & Dragons or even, like, reading The Hobbit because he was into it. And I have exactly one friend, and there's no judgment. She's an absolutely wonderful woman, Dr. Jessica McCall, one of the smartest human beings I've ever known. Her father, this is back in the 90s, super great guy. He would host Magic the Gathering, like, tournaments at his house. Like, he was like a high school teacher, super nice guy. And he, like, if you were a young nerd, you could go over to Mr. McCall's house and you play Magic the Gathering, and he had all his old comics. He named his daughter, Dr. McCall, Jessica, named her after Lady Jessica from Dune. he's the quintessential, the ur nerd from the 70s. Like, just an awesome guy. Mr. McCall, awesome, great guy. Jessica, to my knowledge, last I spoke to her, I was like, hey, you know, are you gaming? Like, I mean, this is the girl who knew about, like, the role-playing game Toon, you know, back when I was, like, a kid. Like, she, this woman had forgotten more about Iron Crown Enterprises, their like, Lord of the Rings role-playing game, than I will ever know. But I was like, oh, you're still gaming these days? And her answer was like, no, not really. You know, because it's just, yeah, she gamed a lot. She knows a lot about gaming. She's incredibly smart. But it's not really, like, her thing, you know. That's and I, so long story short, my point is, I will do my best to always make Dungeons and Dragons the forbidden thing that my kids are not cool enough to be allowed to do. Right? Because if I make it the thing that their dad is into, that he wants to share with them, there is nothing lamer than that. Can you imagine something dorkier than your dad being like, hey, son, let's stab some goblins together? No. I got into Dungeons & Dragons because it had boobs and demons and my dad couldn't understand it. He wasn't hip enough. Right? I mean, you know, if you love punk rock, don't tell your kids. Right? Just keep it secret. So that later they can discover on their own. He'd be like, yeah, no, I feel you. Like, so anyways, that's my two cents. Someday my kids, they'll either come to Dungeons & Dragons on their own or they won't. I hope not to push it on them because I feel like they'll just be like, oh God, this is such dad rock.
No, that's funny. My oldest got into a lot of things that I was into, but I never really did, you know, like video games. And now role-playing games. She plays 5th Ed, but she won't play Starfinder, which is what I do a ton of GMing for. Oh, she'll even play at the same venues that I play at, but she won't play with me. So.
That is hysterical. Well, you know, I'll tell you, like, my son, because I haven't played video games in a long time. The last video game to age my, to show how old I am, the last video game I played seriously, where you sit down and you're like, well, got off work, better sit down and play 8 hours of this video game. Let's make it 16. The last game I did that for was Castlevania Aria of Sorrow for the DS.
Wow.
for the Game Boy. You could play it on your GameCube, if you had the adapter, which I did. That's the last game, and it's a fantastic game. If you like Symphony of the Night, like it's been, and I did, it's a great game. But that's a long time ago. So it's so weird to me to watch, you know, my 6 year old, like, ask his grandfather, my father-in-law, be like, hey, can you buy me an Xbox for Christmas? Oh, can you buy me the Lego Batman game for Christmas or for my birthday? Like, he's, you know, he's worked his tail off, saved up his money. And like to watch him play this and be like, this is so outside my experience. Like, I would have loved this when I was six. I would probably love it now. You know, but you can't tell him that. You can just be like, oh, yeah, enjoy your game, I guess. You know, and then stop while you're washing dishes and be like, oh, man, it looks like so much fun. Punch the reel in the face. Do it.
So what's next for Boomer? What are the kind of things you're working on other than this this web comic for Cobalt Press?
That is the best question I think I've heard all day. So I've got a bunch of stuff kind of in the pipe right now. It's a wonderful company called High Level Games. I did a little bit of work. There's a gentleman by the name of Neil Litherland, and I love Neil Litherland. He's a great guy. You've probably seen his work. It's online. You can find him. The Literary Mercenary is kind of his handle. Super great guy. He and I probably email 3-4 times a week. Great guy, awesome writer. And he and I were working on a thing. We put on a book. It was all for White Wolf, like old school World of Darkness, Werewolf the Apocalypse. And it was a ton of fun. And I started pitching other stuff to my publisher, Josh Heath, over at High Level Games. And he's been hammering stuff out, and it's a great experience to kind of nice. Go, oh yeah, this is, I'm designing for White Wolf, you know, Vampire, The Masquerade, which I grew up on. Obviously I'm still working with, Storm Bunny Studios. We're hammering on Bloodlines of Black Magic. It's so beautiful. Getting to work with Jay Sonia is, I mean, it's just an honor. The man is brilliant. He's hardworking. He's dedicated. He's inspired. I've always got a bunch of other little kind of random stuff. I wouldn't be surprised to see something with my name on it come out from Legendary Games relatively soon. There's always stuff in the pipe. Literally earlier this week, I had a nice email conversation with Owen Casey Stevens, where I was like, oh, hey, are we kind of still working on, you know, this project, and also this other one? And I mean, it's the pandemic, baby. Yeah, it's 2020. Like, it's hit us all. But yeah, so yeah, I've got about 10,000 irons in the fire, and we'll just kind of see what I'm able to hyper focus on in my weird ADHD hyper focusing brain.
Wow, that I'm looking forward to seeing some of that. That sounds exciting. I'm actually really looking forward to that, the webcomic from Cobalt Press. So I'm gonna have to be frequenting their website. Do you know when the first one's going to be published?
Well, I'll tell you now, because I want to be clear. We're not talking webcomic. This is literally just a couple hundred words of goofiness.
Right. Your web comedy sketch more than comic. Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yes. The very first one actually should drop. I mean, as we're speaking, it is. I mean, not to give away too much for the people at home. It is early in February, and I believe by the time this airs, it'll be later in February. But yeah, it should be dropping on Friday, literally tomorrow. Tomorrow should be the very first episode or the very first bit.
Nice, nice.
I promise, I will spam people desperately on my Facebook, on my Twitter. I don't know, probably Instagram too. My wife made me get an Instagram, and so I use that sometimes too.
Excellent. Well, I look forward to that. Thanks so much for joining us on the podcast today, Boomer.
This has been an absolute pleasure. If you have any other questions, I promise I have the world's longest, weirdest answer for it.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, nice chatting with you.
Hey, a pleasure. Sincerely.